Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
911 emergency.
Search goes on in San Francisco for the man known as the Zodiac Killer.
In New York, the search continues for the .44 caliber killer.
See if you can explain to me why I would want to be a Scientologist.
Betches Media presents...
Tell me we have a lead.
Stone Cold, no.
It was literally like the Hunger Games.
Not another true crime podcast.
What can I say? Tough titties.
It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt.
Welcome back, everybody, to what is probably going to be a long episode of Not Another True Crime Podcast, and you'll see why in a second. I'm Sarah Levine, here as always with Casey Balsham.
Hi, guys.
Danny Murphy.
Well, hey, everybody. How we doing?
We are doing adequate.
Okay.
Okay. We are not at this episode because this is a dark one.
Yeah.
Yep. I had to black out as I was like researching it, just being like, okay, and that's gruesome. Let's just move past it.
Yeah, I'm like dieting, but I had to get a bagel this morning to like prepare for this. Like I was like, it's a carb day. Like I needed to carb my way through this. Yeah.
I know. I didn't eat. So but I didn't want there to be anything in my stomach.
Yeah, that's the move. Before we get into it, I did want to discuss one update. There's been an interesting update in the Britney Spears conservatorship. So first off, she said that she wants her dad to no longer be the sole conservator.
Mm-hmm.
And also the ACLU tweeted that they'd be willing to step in and help her.
That made this so much more real for me because I thought for a while, I'm like, free Britney, I love it and I understand it, but I thought it was such a fan-driven thing.
Yes.
But now I'm like, wow. ACLU was getting involved. That's when you know.
Yeah.
And she's 39. She's almost 39 years old. Like she should have control like of her
life.
Of the things that she's earned while she was, you know, apparently so sick that she couldn't be in control of it, which obviously we've gone over if you've listened to our Britney episode, but the ACLU getting involved, this is big news.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But also, I'm like, is that what my $25 a month needs to go to? Like, I don't know.
I'm like, dope, toxic. She'll be able to go to Starbucks. Like, all right.
And I'm like, what about human rights violations? Like, I guess, I mean, this could be one, but
yeah.
I don't know. I'm like, what about the not rich people?
Yeah.
However, it's exciting. So
it is exciting.
Hopefully we'll get answers.
And also there's another update about another case I just got. You know what's hot off the press when it's an alert from E! News on the phone?
Oh, shit.
Stop.
That Lori Loughlin and her husband are like going to jail.
Oh, shit. He got 5 months, right?
He got 5 months. Well, she's like not yet, but I mean, probably in the middle of recording it'll be released. That she'll be like 3 to 5 months. And they'll probably have to alternate for... when kind of like Joe and Teresa situation, like one of them goes at a time.
Like, that was their plea deal, right? It was either you're gonna be found like super guilty and you're gonna be in there for years, or you just like say that you did it and get a couple months.
They really should have Felicity Huffman did. Like she was just like, yup, went in for 2 business days. Like I ordered something from ASOS and she was out of prison by the time before my package came. Like she literally, I was like, where are my jeans? But Felicity's out.
Literally.
Oh my God.
She's giving cupcakes.
Yeah. But I know. Wow. And also, it's insane too. They're going to be going. I wonder if they'll hold off until COVID calms down. But I mean, COVID will never calm down. But so I guess they're just sending them in there regardless. But who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. I mean, they have enough money to get those rapid tests that like all the rich people in the Hamptons are getting. So
facts.
They'll be fine.
They'll be just okay. But. Hot off the presses, Danny. Thank you for the update.
Yeah.
So hot. Well, we've got a big case for you, like we said today. It is highly, you guys have messaged us about it a bunch. It's also like one of those famous cases that you've definitely heard of, but like, I didn't know the details of exactly what happened. Like, I knew it was crazy people. I knew people got killed, but I didn't actually know it was happening. And we also just want to give a disclaimer. This is, you know, such a big case that there's obviously, there's so much information about it. We gathered what we think is like the gist of the timeline and the story. But of course, there's probably other things and things left out, or maybe there may be a couple things. But this is kind of what the basics of it is. And so we're talking about Charles Manson and the Tate murders and the family and all the fucking craziness that ensued with this case. And it is big and it is gruesome. And oh boy,
buckle up. Buckle up. Don't eat.
Or eat bagels if you cope like me. If you're a carb coper like myself, order that bagel, egg, cheese, cream cheese both sides, whatever you need.
Buckle the fuck up.
Cream cheese both sides. Really have a day.
It took me a minute to like try to visualize. I was like,
oh, I like a wob, a wet ass bagel.
And then I was like, no.
A wob, a wet ass bagel. Oh, wow. I'll never be able to not order that.
You'll be like, hi, I will have a wet ass bagel. And they'll be like, ma'am.
I mean, if bagel places are smart, they will put that on the menu.
Everyone would buy it. I mean, I'm sorry. We should be, okay, we're opening up a cafe now.
Yes.
We are, okay. Yeah. Put it on the list of jobs, new jobs.
New jobs. So whatever your bagel is, have it nearby, if that's how you roll. Let's talk about Charles Manson. Charles Mills Maddox was born November 12, 1934 in Cincinnati to a 16-year-old alcoholic sex worker. His mother briefly married a man named William Manson, so Charles took his last name, and his biological father is not publicly known. He went out to a boys' school at age 12 and then was rejected by his mother when he wanted to come home. I also read that there was a lot of sexual assault at that school that he endured. And then after coming back, he lived on the streets and kind of got by committing petty crimes. He was in and out of reform schools and prison for about 20 years. And actually at one point when he got out of prison, I read that he had said basically like, I don't know how to function, like just put me back in there. And they were like, it doesn't work that way. In 1967, after getting out of prison again, he moved to San Francisco. This is where he started the family. Again, 1967, drugs, hippies, cults.
Yeah, it was Janice like a Joplin. It was a whole new world. And he was like, let me just go to the epicenter of like where people are just like free loving.
Yeah. He's smart.
One of the side notes of this, of researching this case, made me realize as much as I love learning about the 60s, I would have hated being there for it.
I like
air conditioning and not doing drugs. Like I would have not vibed. Yeah. I would have been so like, it wouldn't have worked out in my favor.
I was gonna say like, I barely believe in essential oils. I wouldn't be down with people who are like, oh, free love and feel the vibes. I'd be like, oh my God, come back to planet Earth. Like it just.
But you guys, but you know what I would have, like I had the same thought. Like I saw them all in the streets like of Haight-Ashbury, which, you know, like I've been to a million times. I used to go there after school because I grew up in San Francisco, but I did see a big group of like sweaty people and I was like, oh yeah, that doesn't look fun. But Studio 54 looked like fun.
That's my cult.
Like, cause yeah.
Like cocaine and disco. Yeah.
Isn't that the '60s or was that the '70s?
That was the '70s.
Seventies,
I want to say. Cause the '60s to me, it's like SantaCon, but like with earthy. Like it's an earthy SantaCon where it's just people on top of each other, not in their bodies, like just being like,
so,
I'm invincible. And then the '70s have a different narrative.
So we're all into club drugs, not outdoor drugs.
Yes. No hallucinogens, but uppers for me.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Up, Shania Twain and me.
We like Coke, but we don't like LSD. All right. Yeah. Just so we're all on the same page.
Truthfully. But for a beverage, Diet Coke, just in case anyone is ever sending me one. Yeah.
Truthfully, yeah.
And if there is a Diet Coke of Coke, but that's a whole different thing.
Okay, so he goes to San Francisco, then starts what would later be known as the family. At first, it was about 100 followers, mostly hippies. Just wanted to do hallucinogens. Again, not for us, but we get it.
Yeah.
then he kind of realized that with everybody being fucked up on drugs, he could act as this guru and people would listen to him. So he started doing that. They would bounce around a lot, but eventually ended up in the San Fernando Valley. And then Manson started kind of like preaching to people. And he took a lot of his beliefs from this notion that Satan and Christ would come together at the end of the world to judge humanity. And that's what he was telling everyone. I feel like all cults are always very focused on the apocalypse.
Oh, always.
Oh, yeah. No, because I think they, yeah, I like wonder if it's that you have to like put a fear in somebody that you know how to save them when the world ends, yes, or something like that, you know, like, like they're all going to die, but like, I know how to dig a hole. So like the world will explode except for this hole that we have dug in the ground for ourselves.
Yeah. And then when you're on LSD, you're like, I need to get in that fucking hole.
Yeah, apparently.
Right. Sure. I feel like it just plays on people's fear of death and like the unknown. So
yeah, there's also, he also like incorporated a lot of different things. You guys see that when he was in one of the prisons he was in before this, he like dabbled in Scientology. So he was kind of like
pulling
from a lot of different things.
Yeah, he was like heavily influenced by Scientology.
Yeah, yeah.
Alrighty, so most of the followers were, as you would guess, women, impressionable young girls who believed him when he said he was Jesus because they thought he was Jesus. To be fair, he had the hairstyle going for him.
Yeah.
And basically a lot of them kind of just wanted someone to believe in or like a father figure because, I mean, I feel like nobody who joins an insane cult like this is a perfectly well-adjusted individual with a strong support system. I mean, these are all like vulnerable, impressionable young people. So,
yeah.
And it's even like
here.
Yeah. Go ahead, Danny. Sorry.
Oh, I was gonna say, and it's even, it kind of shines a light on how he grew up too, where he was, he grew up and it was a whole system and like rough with the mom, tried to sell him off for a pitcher of beer, a whole situation.
Oh, yeah.
So he knows the personality of the people then to feed off, like to get, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about the beer thing, but apparently his mom like sold him for a pitcher of beer, or I thought it was a bottle of beer. In any case, it was like a small amount of beer. And then his uncle had to go get him back.
Yeah.
This is like when he was like a baby.
Also, I like what mom, I mean, I know that the waitress probably wanted a kid, but like imagine someone be like, I'll give you my child for a glass of wine. I'm like, I don't want your fucking kid.
That's not a good trade.
Like
an
unfair trade-off, but yeah. But this just plays into like, he was rejected from a very young age and that like kind of plays a through line in his story. Yeah, but it is. But so, yeah, you're right. He knew exactly how to find people that also maybe had a little bit of like childhood trauma or just were like searching something. Because they do say like a lot of the people that followed him also were kind of like all American, this or that. But then like the drugs kind of changed them or like something kind of happened that just like changed these people's trajectory. And they needed somebody to listen to be like, you're okay. And that's what he did, essentially. He just made people feel good.
All right. And then, of course, like, weirdly, there are so many intertwining scenarios with this case and this story. So much so that if you don't know this band, your parents definitely do. The Beach Boys are somehow involved. The Beach Boys are connected. Because everything was set in motion when one of them, Dennis Wilson, picked up two Manson family members that were hitchhiking. And they talked about their guru, Charlie. I mean, of course, I mean, I feel like if you're someone who picks up hitchhikers, you're like, yeah, let me listen about this guru. I'm into it. So Wilson, who also was a bit lost at this time, kind of like the followers of Manson, he was getting a divorce and everything like that. So he was looking for something else. He became obsessed with the idea of this guy, Charlie. He thought he was a wizard and a quote unquote gas and enjoyed talking to him. He thought he was a good time hang. So
yeah, you know, basically he sounds like a good time party guy.
Yeah, I'm like, ooh, who's this Charles? Yeah. So then Wilson ended up moved Manson and his crew into his house and took an interest in his music, even recording a song of his with the Beach Boys, but without crediting him when it came out, because of course they had to cut ties. Because it was interesting, in a documentary I watched, like Charles Manson was always playing guitar, singing and stuff like that. And even in prison, one of the guards was like, you can sing, you really can't play guitar. So I guess he had like a good voice with that. So all with this and everything else, all of the Manson members started to really believe in Charles more, if he could be so charismatic to have someone, because the Beach Boys were big, like they're
huge. Yeah.
So they're all like, of course we're going to believe this guy if he's able to convince one of the most famous like musicians to like be on board and captivated with him. And also it's just like when you're roped up in like, because now it's kind of like roped up in this star LA Hollywoody type situation too.
So, yeah, they rubbed elbows with so many famous people that I'm like, how? Like, I can't even, I've never even run into a celebrity on the streets of New York. Like, how is this random?
You haven't?
You have to go to Upper West Side more. No. I only
see Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm just broke. Too broke for the celebs.
I was actually just thinking about this the other day that I wish that I, like, somehow kept a running tally of every person I've seen between, like, LA and New York and all that stuff.
They're fine, yeah.
I've seen some big ones. Seen Leo in The Village.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I've only seen
very
like
funny.
Barely famous people, and those are the people that mean the most to me, so it works out.
Truly.
Like Charlie from Girls, yeah, I peed in the same bathroom as him.
Love Charlie from Girls. Yeah.
Okay, but love Sarah, that Sarah, they did more than just rub elbows. They rubbed a lot of stuff. Like a lot of things were rubbing.
Correct.
A lot of things were rubbing. It also was the 60s. You know, yeah. So
again, party.
A party and but then to the point where it got a little concerning. Manson and Wilson had women act as servants to them, and they all did drugs and had group sex, orgies, a whole kind of scenario. Dennis is now quoted as saying, "Till the day I die, I won't talk about this time because no."
Relatable. That's super embarrassing.
Yeah, I think this was from an old like Rolling Stone article where he's like, I won't.
I can't and I shan't. Yeah, it's bravo, bravo, fucking bravo. He's Denise Richarding his time with the Mansons.
Yeah, I mean, I won't even let anyone tell me what I did when I was blacked out. I would certainly not go on the record and talk about my group cult sex with a convicted mass murderer.
Yeah.
Although I would love if he said something, he was like, I did have an entanglement with
yes. Manson.
He needs to get on Red Table Talk.
Yeah, Jada.
Get on Red Table Talk.
Jada could get it out of him. I trust Jada with him. Yeah. So then it got to a point where Wilson spent over $100,000 when everyone in the house got gonorrhea and group sex became painful. Do we know?
So wait, was he spending that just on like healthcare? What was he spending it on?
So he took them all to like a doctor or like a clinic. And I think basically, I mean, I think they all needed like meds, and I'm sure that none of them are like insured. So I think he just paid, like, cause I think there was like a decent amount of people and they were all just fucking and sucking. And so they call it like a gonorrhea outbreak in the house. So he was we have to figure this out. So he paid for treatment for everybody and for everybody to see somebody. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. Or he went to D. Gary Young's clinic and that's why it cost $100,000.
And it didn't work. Yeah.
And it didn't work. Yeah.
Yeah.
He even paid for studio time for Manson to record a song and introduced him to like industry people. Terry Melcher, the son of Doris Day. I mean, I'll sing all Doris Day songs right now, but we don't, even though this is a two-part podcast now, we don't have the time. Rudy Altobelli. So he was kind of like network, like it was sort of getting to the thing where it's like, Charles is really getting around. But then in 1968, Wilson's manager kicks out Charlie and his crew when apparently Manson pulled a knife on a producer Wilson had set him up with to record some music. So his Wilson's manager was sort of like, this guy's gonna fuck up your career and your connections. You gotta get away from it.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's rumors that the studio sessions did not go very well. And that like Manson kind of didn't like the people that was producing it. I mean, he's also like a fucking psychopath. So who the fuck knows what was happening?
I mean, I'm sure he wasn't super easy to get along with like creatively.
Oh.
Yeah. Especially like, I imagine too, like, you know, being the guy that tells everyone what to do and then being told what to do. I'm sure that just is like, didn't mesh
It doesn't. Well, it really only reminds me, the only like music production thing I have in my mind is when Ali Lohan went with the Maloof brothers in Atlantic City and she kept on storming out because they didn't get her vision, and I feel like it was only 10 times that insanity with Manson.
What do you think her vision was? Like,
she wanted to be about to ask.
The Maloof brothers. Yeah, she had to go all the way around. I do like that song anyway.
Oh my god. Googling that immediately after this. So what happens next is that the family then takes over this rundown Western set called Spawn Ranch in Topanga Canyon in August of 1968. Obviously, yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we were just saying, kind of gets a lot of these, I mean, obviously different ending, which is really fun to, I mean, it's nice to think that maybe all this didn't happen, but they do get a lot right. Like, and they show what the Spawn Ranch looked like. The family members would essentially just do chores and have sex with the blind 80-year-old owner in order to stay there for free. It's just even kind of wild. Like, how do you even just find an old Western set? Or like, how does an old Western set? It's just such a bizarre place to take up residence, but like really fits these people, you know?
So weird. I feel like someone maybe just like gave Manson a tip or something like that. Because he was vaguely involved with industry people. That's my theory.
He knows when the auditions are. Yeah.
he's on backstage.
Yeah.
So in December of 1968, Manson, obviously, again, we know he like loves music. He becomes obsessed with the Beatles' White Album and believed it was speaking to him and the family about an apocalyptic war arising from racial tension between quote unquote blacks and whites. Okay. So he called this event Helter Skelter after the Beatles song of the same name. I mean, Paul McCartney, after everything came out, would later say, like, the song's actually about the fall of the Roman Empire and should not have been used to.
Yeah.
He did not mean to write anything that would cause anyone to believe that they should incite a race war. But, you know, Manson, again, not of sound mind. So
this is what happens.
I like to connect his own dots. Yeah.
Yeah, this is LSD in a life of kind of unwantedness and abuse. It's some people just aren't set up. Like, he was never set up to be any, you know, granted, you don't have any excuse to do this, but people just aren't given the same stuff as other. It just, his whole life seems to have sucked, you know. I'm not defending Charles Manson. I'm just saying, like, we see this pattern of people that were abused and unwanted, and then they kind of just turn to whatever, you know? So Manson's theory of Helter Skelter was that the war between black people and white people would be won by black people because of the divide between racists and non-racist white people. A little bit of like 2020. Black people would win, but then be ruled by the family, who would be safe from this war because obviously they have a secret bunker down in the ground. Again, they're going to dig a hole. They call it the Tail of Submarine. So they would be fine. So during this race war, black people would essentially kill all the white people, but then black people wouldn't know. They're so used to being told what to do by white people that they wouldn't know how to run the planet. And that's when Charles Manson and his family would come back up.
Would emerge from the ground.
They would emerge from the ground.
And
be like, I know how to run this planet and I will help you. So essentially making him in charge of everything.
Completely tracks. Yes, of course.
Yes.
Obviously, this is a completely laid out plan. He also believed that the family had to record an album where the lyrics would trigger this race war. He was tied into music, all this stuff. And like, and then some of the followers believed that they were going to like get this record deal. It's just
we're going to rule the world, but first I got to land at number one in the Billboard Hot 100. It's right all here in the lyrics of Helter Skelter. It's in the plan. Just trust me.
He's like, we have to have a TikTok dance go along with it to really get the kids involved. Yeah.
Got to lay down these tracks. We've got to lay down the tracks to incite
Drake
the race
on it.
War.
They can't.
So they started essentially just doing general like apocalypse prep and making maps and they were also started to write like songs and lyrics, and Terry Melcher was actually supposed to come listen to them, but he never showed up. And this was in February. Cause at a certain point, Terry was interested in Charlie's music. Although we don't know if it's like him being industry, like, yeah, baby, I'll see you soon. Da da da. Or if he actually was interested in Manson's music. Obviously he had the in from Dennis Wilson, but Terry was interested.
Wasn't good.
You know, I know that there's like a lot of stuff about his music. I know that even as recently as I feel like last year, 2 years ago, there was some musician that wanted to like record all the songs, and people were like, why are you going to glorify this man?
Yeah,
like,
don't do
he
that.
Was a fucking murderer. Yeah. So.
Well, the one song of his that the Beach Boys did record ended up flopping. So
it was on a B-side.
Yeah.
It just like was not a good song. So
it wasn't like one of their fun ones.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and say cult leader, psychopath, terrible musician.
Can't do it. Yeah.
And that's the title of that. You can't have it all. You know, you can't have it all.
Dinner we you can't, almost you can't have be a, it all.
Thank you, Danny. I was wondering when we were going to get our Whitney interlude. But Melcher was actually interested in making a documentary because he was fascinated by like Charlie's way of living and that they were living on this ranch and that they were kind of like just this hippie culture. Like he was kind of interested in that.
Because he was the definition of like what the era was.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Manson did end up auditioning for Melcher at the Cielo Drive house that Melcher was living in at that point, which was actually, the house belonged to Altobelli, and he was just renting it to Melcher and his then girlfriend, Candace Bergen.
Hello, crazy.
I know. Crazy. That's it. There's this is like Us Weekly. Like there's a ton of connections.
It's really who's who.
Yes. Yeah. It's a who's who of what the fuck. But obviously, like we said, Charlie, it's like he wasn't that great of a musician. So Melcher does pass on signing him, but he does continue with this documentary. But he ends up leaving the project after he sees kind of like violent behavior, like Charlie again, like kind of attacked something happened. And he was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to distance myself from this project. And then obviously Wilson and Melcher end up both cutting ties with Manson, and it kind of upsets him. Again, it's this theme of rejection that has just caused him to then kind of really, really upsets him. Melcher and Bergen end up moving out of the Cielo Drive house, and then Altobelli ends up leasing the house to director Roman Polanski and his wife, Sharon Tate, who was a like perfect, she was like just a beautiful actress who just stuck out in a crowd and was basically like handpicked from like as an extra to like become this movie star. And
like one of those people who was born to be it.
Yeah. So Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate end up moving into Melcher's old place on Cielo Drive.
And then we meet Gary Hinman, who becomes a central figure in everything that is to follow. So basically, Gary had befriended some of the family members and let some of them stay at his house in Topanga Canyon. And he just like, you know, let people do this.
He was kind of hippie too.
I mean, nobody is just like, I don't even like let my friend stay because I don't have the room. Like he would just let random transient people stay. So of course he's definitely.
Free loves, drug. He was part of the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we're going to kind of set the scene for the murders because they didn't happen in a vacuum and there was like a buildup. So weeks before the Tate LaBianca murders, a member of the family, Bobby Beausoleil, bought drugs to sell from Hinman, but they were bad. So he went to get his money back. And like members would sell drugs to make money for the family. Tex Watson, who was also a member of the family, like sold weed and during a drug deal gone wrong with Bernard Crow, Manson shot him and thought he killed him. He also thought that Crow was a member of the Black Panthers. So he was like, all right, this is it. The Panthers are going to be after me. I need money for protection. But he did not die and also wasn't in the Black Panthers. And I feel like this just ties into this whole race war also not making sense.
Just everything to incite it, yeah.
Okay, so here's where Gary comes back into the picture. Manson was convinced Gary inherited a lot of money, so he ordered Bobby to try to scare the money out of Gary and convince him to give it to the family. Gary said he had no money, so Bobby basically beat the shit out of him. And then Manson went there the next day, cut his ear and his cheek with a samurai sword, and then left. Cool. Manson then ordered Bobby and the women to tend to him and then eventually had him sign over the deed to his car, after which they stabbed him to death.
Mm-hmm. He brought like Susan Atkins and he brought another female member who like it was alleged that they had both slept with Gary, so they thought that maybe the girls could help like shake this money out of him, but again Gary didn't
there was no money.
There was absolutely no money. Gary was like trying to tell him, he's like, there's no money, and they essentially like kind of like left him. Well, they tried to like there's a couple, they tried to like help him. Like apparently one of them, the girls tried to like sew up his face with like floss or something. Like it was, yeah, sure. Exactly. But essentially it was just 2 days of him being tortured essentially.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, I guess I feel like I should warn everybody. It's going to get graphic if, you know,
yeah,
stabbing someone to death and carving their face isn't already graphic. So just keep that in mind. And if you, are, you know, easily affected by that, then you might want to tune off for a bit. Okay, so after stabbing Gary to death, they wrote political piggy in blood across his wall, and they also tried to draw a paw print so police would think the Black Panthers were involved to incite this race war and blah, blah, blah. But then it didn't work. Bobby was arrested in a car wearing all his bloody clothes on August 7th. And this act was a big deal because it kind of changed the family from being just like hippie weirdos to full-blown murderers. And it's like, now we're on this path to destruction to try to bring about this helter-skelter scenario. And it's just like careening towards a very violent and gruesome end.
Yeah. I think Manson, was like feeling a little bit like one thing we saw, I think Danny watched the same one, like after they like didn't get this record deal and all this stuff and all these things that he said were going to happen weren't happening. Like he was like, okay, I need this race war to happen so that they'll believe me. Like I think there was part of this going on as well. And this is obviously how he was triggering it.
Exactly. There was nothing, all the things he wanted weren't coming to him. So then he snapped in this way. And of course the people with him, I feel like it unfortunately got to a point where none of them are turning back from this moment too.
Yeah.
And that happens. I feel the next murders are the ones that a lot of people, I feel these are the Sharon Tate murders are the ones that a lot of people mainly associate with Charles Manson. I feel like that was the first time I've heard of his name, everything like that. So on August 8th/9th of 1969,
That's because I'm assuming it happened like at midnight. So some reports say the 8th, like I'm assuming it happened somewhere
night,
in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
probably
I think that there's like,
and one day maybe ended in another day. Something like
yeah. Because there's like a lot of, I've seen so many reports where the dates just change one day. So that's why I just put, it must have happened right. Yeah.
So one of those days, August 1969, Roman Polanski was out of town in the house they were renting, and his wife, Sharon Tate, at this time was 8.5 months pregnant. Four members of the family went to the house as instructed by Manson. They were Tex Watson, Susan Atkins, Patricia Krenwinkel, and Linda Casbian, who was on the lookout. The members were then instructed to kill everybody in the house. It said that Polanski's house was targeted as part of Manson's massacre of the beautiful and the elite, a world that he was rejected from, kind of with the overarching thing that he's always been rejected, and then in the weird relationships to Hollywood, all these things. Some also say it was a message to Melcher for not following through on promises, that he basically went into hiding after this. And some say they thought it was still Melcher's house, although Susan would later say they didn't know he lived there anymore. So it's kind of all, there's a couple different things.
Yeah. Like it's, I mean, I think they all tie in, but I think it was all based on like his anger of like
rejection,
not getting the things that Melcher, so there was like a tie in with Melcher still, but also they targeted Polanski, I think, because she was a big
I think they kind of also wanted to choose the victims like deliberately to really shock people and again bring
100%.
About this.
And also know like for a fact thing. It would get international coverage too. I feel like.
They wanted them to be noticed.
So in the home was of course Sharon Tate, and then she also had three guests: Jay Sebring, who was a hairstylist, an ex-lover; Abigail Folger, who was related to like the Folger Coffee Company Air.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the writer of Wojciech Frykowski, as well as Stephen Parent, who was there visiting and visiting the caretaker of the house. So to start off their attacks, the family with instructions cut the phone lines and then climbed over the fence and went in through a window. Ted Waxon told them, quote unquote, "I am the devil and I'm here to do the devil's work." So they first shot Parent, who was only 18 at the time, and he was driving away from the house, which horrified Casbian,
Just yeah, kind Caspian of was like a new member, and she kind of, I think, didn't really know what was happening, but she was like, that's a kid. And I think that started to, she was the first one that kind of like had some doubts about what they were doing.
Yeah, and it was a kid just like not really involved with it, just like leaving the home. Yeah,
yeah, that's so sad. Just like visiting someone who worked at the house.
And just to drive home what Sarah said, if you guys don't know it, it's very gruesome coming up. Just to let you guys know, the murders were very gruesome. They stabbed Sharon Tate 16 times after she begged just to be allowed to have her son. She said that she would be a hostage until she gave birth, and then they could kill her after. All she wanted to do was just have her son survive. Susan later said that she wanted to cut the baby out of her stomach, but they did not have enough time. And then with that, they ended up using Sharon's blood to write pig on the wall. Atkins then said to Tate, quote unquote, look, bitch, I have no mercy for you. You're going to die and you'd better get used to it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's what she said to her. That's what Susan like told a cop or told somebody that she said to, as Sharon was like pleading for her life. She's like, look, bitch, I have no mercy for you.
Yeah. So Sebring got mad that they were so rough with the pregnant Tate. So then they ended up shooting him. And then they apparently tied Tate and Sebring together with ropes around their neck. And then they put the rope over a ceiling beam.
Oh my God.
They stabbed Folger 7 times after asking her for money. Frykowski was tied at the wrists with a towel. He briefly was able to escape, but Atkins hit him with a gun and then stabbed him and shot him twice. Folger also briefly escaped, but then was caught and stabbed an additional 28 times. It's just, Caspian was on the lookout and said after she heard the massacre happening, she hated it so much and falsely told Susan that someone was coming. Caspian later became the star witness in the case. And in this case, also Manson criticized the murders for being sloppy because it was, even in the documentary I watched, they interviewed the police, the officer who was the first on the scene. It was, they were like, this was the most gruesome thing we've ever experienced, seen, heard, entire career.
Yeah. And I guess they like brought a change of clothes. They like took off all their bloody clothes and like just threw them like on the other side of the mountain. I think those clothes ended up being like found later when they were like starting to investigate the Manson family. But yeah, it was pretty gruesome. And all Charles had to say was that like two of them almost got away. Like, you guys did this sloppy. And then on that same little documentary, one of the members that was part of the family, she's like, I don't know. They all came back. Everyone slept in the next morning. And then they wanted to watch the news. And it was the first story. And they were like laughing and giggling and being like, oh, we got a good one. So they said it was like a very, like, it was a very wild thing. And I think that people kind of, I know that it also said like Hollywood went cuckoo after that. Like all these,
everyone was buying guns. Everyone was worried.
They were buying guns. Mm-hmm. They were getting guards and all this stuff. And the very next night, they decided that they were not done. That this was still a mission they needed to go on. And I guess it seems like they wanted to go kill somebody like in a church, but the church was closed. So they ended up, and this was on August 9th or 10th, 6 members of the family, the original 4, as well as 2 more, Leslie Van Houten and Steve Grogan and Manson, who was also in the car, went to the home of Lino and Rosemary LaBianca. Lino was a wealthy supermarket exec, and he murdered them both in a similar, he didn't actually, they were both murdered in a similar gruesome fashion. Again, this is the next night after this shocking murder of these other 5 people, essentially. Apparently Manson got out of the car and tied up Lino and Rosemary, and because he was worried that they would escape as what happened the night before. So he tied them up and then he essentially left. And then the other 6 family members went in and killed them. And Lino was stabbed with a bayonet and Krenwinkel carved the words war into his abdomen. Rosemary was stabbed to death. I've read one thing that Leslie Van Houten was the one that stabbed her. I read another one that said that she simply held her down. But either way, Rosemary was stabbed to death. And then they wrote death to pigs in blood on the wall. They also wrote helter skelter at all of these. So there's pig references in blood in all of these murders. And then they also wrote helter skelter. Manson had actually this was like a weird rule, I guess, he had, that he insisted that every woman play a part, so they all had to stab the victims even after they were already dead, just so that it was like everybody was involved. Manson took Rosemary's wallet as well and wanted to drop it off where a black person could possibly find it and have the murders pinned on them. Again, like, he's trying, his whole thing is to create this end of the world scenario, which then he would obviously like take over the world. But so this is back to back two gruesome murders. So even if the same four people like were feeling any remorse, like they clearly weren't feeling remorse about the first one, because they just went and did the exact same thing the next day. And seemingly the LaBiancas were targeted for no reason other than I think they just were able to get into their house and they were rich.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, like this is obviously they weren't at the same level of fame or at all as Tate. So this one, it just kind of seemed like for murder's sake, just to also, I don't know, I guess they were just feeling on a high from the night before. I don't know, but very, very gruesome, very, very sad.
And on that note, that's it for part one of the Manson Family Murders episode. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening to us. You can follow us on Instagram at NATCpod. Shoot us a DM. We'd like to hear from you. And make sure you stay tuned for part two.
Betches.